Let's just take it from the top.
You are listening to Night Vision.
Hello and welcome to Night Vision, a multi-platform audio magazine presented by the Indiana State Council of the Knights of Columbus, designed to enrich, enlighten, educate, and entertain.
Welcome back, gang. You are listening to Night Vision. Easter is nearly here, and we're just hanging with our peeps, no matter how stale they may be. Kind of like that joke. Coming up on today's show, Walt Peja tells us about an unusual spiritual indie Easter tradition. And then Carl Kaiser stops by to tell us more about the Divine Mercy Chaplet. But first, Walt sits down with our Director of Veterans Affairs, Steve Lutz.
I am sitting with our Veterans Affairs Chairman, Steve Lutz. So Steve, if you could introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Steve Lutz. I am a member of the Knights of Columbus Council 451 in Fort Wayne, and also Assembly 4th Degree 239, also located in Fort Wayne, and I've been a Knight since 2013.
As our Affairs Chairman, one of the things I'm really impressed with is how you've gotten in there and really, you know, focused ministry on these particular areas that are vital to ensuring that our veterans are taken care of. If you could talk a little bit about that. And, you know, I think that when we were getting ready for this, the first thing you were talking about was the Warriors to Lords project. And if you could explain that a little bit and just kind of expand on that for us.
Yeah, so it's a great honor for me to serve as our state's Veteran Affairs Chairman for our state council and serve as much as I can to the Knights and the 200 plus councils across the state of Indiana. So we have programs that are done by our order at the national, or what we call a supreme level, and then we have our own programs within the state. So Walt has mentioned the Warriors to Lords program. So Lords is a Catholic shrine, a pilgrimage site in France that has hosted a international military pilgrimage every year since shortly after World War II. Currently, there are over 40 nations that send military contingents to Lourdes for spiritual wellness, spiritual growth, and then what I would say for us, charity, unity, fraternity, which are core principles of the Knights of Columbus. The pilgrimage happens every May. However, for 2 years, it did not happen because the French government, due to COVID, would not allow the pilgrims to come to Lourdes. Here, the U.S. contingent is sponsored by the Knights of Columbus. We raise money nationwide in councils and assemblies to help fund a wounded warrior, and that could be a physically wounded or a non-physically wounded, because there are issues that can a veteran could have that are not physically apparent, plus caregivers. Now, last year, the Knights of Columbus sponsored 263 either wounded warriors or caregivers to go from the United States point of debarkation, which was the East Coast, to France, to Lourdes, France, and then hosted them with their accommodations and then participation in all the events. It cost $2,600 to sponsor one wounded warrior or caregiver to go to Lourdes. Here in our state, we've been kind of up and down over the years, but we pretty much put a focus on it once we got into COVID, and we raised enough money to sponsor four wounded warriors or caregivers to go to Lourdes. And our goal is to continue at that level and continue to sponsor these men and women to go to Lourdes. And I would also say that You know, I didn't know that much about lords when I started the position, but there are also priests who go to lords. Some of them as wounded warriors haven't had service in Afghanistan or Iraq. Mm-hmm. So it's a really worthy thing. And if you take 263 and multiply it by 2,600, it comes up to close to $700,000 that the Knights of Columbus for the United States spend to help these men and women get spiritual wellness and camaraderie and certainly a life-changing experience. So we will certainly continue to work and push to support the Warriors to Lords pilgrimage program.
So the next thing that we talked about was a little closer to home, and that has more to do with making sure that we know who our veterans are. So you care to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm a veteran myself. I served in the Army, and it was something that I kind of thought maybe I would have to do, especially coming out of college in the late 60s, early 70s. But we want to capture for our state. So we have what we call our Knights of Columbus Living History Knight Veteran Program, where we have a template. It's a guide for a knight who is a military veteran to complete some information and basically explains what service they went in, what experience they had, what where they served, what their military occupational skill was, and a little bit about their military career. But then the more important part is to capture, so how did that military experience impact your spirituality, your Catholic faith, your family, and your career? And what have you done in the Knights of Columbus since you've been there? Right now, we have about 40 of these bios. They're limited to one page. They have at the top the individual's name, what military service, what years they served, and then it has their picture, which they choose, either one in uniform or one as they currently are. And then the service logo and then this information. It has to fit on one page. And I'll tell you, there's some really interesting ones. We had a knight in a council in Fishers, Indiana, who was a Marine in World War II, served on Saipan, and then was in Hiroshima, right after the bomb was dropped on occupation duty. Came back in 1946, finished his duty in the Philadelphia Navy Yard, close to where I grew up, and then had a long career in the New York Racing Association, as he was originally from Long Island. Ended up moving to Indiana later in life with his wife because he had grandkids here. His wife subsequently passed away, and he just passed away last year, but he was 102, had been a knight for 81 years. It's quite the story. Lived alone all the way to the end. We've got stories from Vietnam, we've got Korea, we've got Cold War, peacetime, Afghanistan, and we're trying to build up a repository that we can keep at the State Museum, which is in Terre Haute on the Gibault campus that Knights help sponsor.
Excellent. That is a very, very worthy project. So I think as we're going along, if anybody out there knows a Brother Knight who needs to be accounted for, you know, they can get in touch with veteransaffairs at indianakfc.org to get them all on that. Moving on from taking a census of our veterans within the order, the next thing, we're looking forward with the next thing, and that has to do with making sure the spiritual needs of our military services be taken care of. Can you talk a little bit about the initiatives that we have there?
Yeah, so the Knights of Columbus in general are very involved with helping to address a critical shortage, just like we have a critical shortage in all our dioceses and our Catholic faith worldwide, nationwide, statewide. So we're short priests, but I'll tell you what, I served in the Army for a long time, and it was kind of rare to always have a Catholic priest available. wherever you may have served. And if they did, they were serving a huge population, because a military chaplain is a designated officer in one of the six services now: the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, the Air Force, the Coast Guard, and the Space Force. Now, they have to go to chaplain school. They have to have already finished their seminary, be ordained, particularly as a Catholic. But remember, we have military chaplains from all different faiths, and that certainly has expanded in recent years. But for us as Catholics, so our Catholic chaplains start out as a seminary, and most of the time, we had a case here in Indiana just recently where a priest from my diocese here, Fort Wayne and South Bend, who had been a priest for several years, had not discerned a vocation to military chaplaincy, but just went on active duty in the U.S. Navy, and is now serving on board the USS Ronald Reagan in Japan. But once a seminarian discerns, he applies to the Archdiocese for the Military Services, commonly called AMS. It's in Washington, D.C. If accepted, then that individual seminary would become what we call a co-sponsored seminarian. And co-sponsored seminarians then have their tuition costs at their seminary split between their home diocese or religious order and the Archdiocese for Military Services. Well, the AMS, Archdiocese for Military Services, gets no government funding, but they manage the careers of all the serving military chaplains, whether they be on active duty, National Guard or Reserve, or the seminarians who are studying to eventually become military chaplains. So in 2011, our Supreme Knight, Carl Anderson, had been out on a Navy aircraft carrier and was getting a tour and asked to see the Catholic chaplain. And there was no Catholic chaplain on board the aircraft carrier. And an aircraft carrier, and I'm not a Navy guy, but I know from a lot of my friends and stuff that there's about 5,000 sailors as a complement and Marines who serve on board an aircraft carrier. So our Supreme Knight really got energized on that, and we kicked up what we call the Father McGivney. The Blessed Michael McGivney is the founder of the Knights of Columbus in 1882, for those that may not be aware of that. So we have the Father Michael McGivney co-sponsored seminary and scholarships, where we help raise money. And the Knights of Columbus in the U.S. have donated over $2 million to the AMS since they really got started back in 2011. If I narrow that down, here in Indiana, we put a push on that. And during our last fraternal year, we raised over $10,000, and we were able to contribute that to AMS. We feel pretty good about that. And we have several seminarians currently from Indiana who are serving as co-sponsored seminarians under AMS. If I could expand on that. So if you're a member of the military, and whether you're in a hazardous duty area or not, you're usually away from home, and you can be in somewhere in the continental United States or somewhere overseas, usually not where you're from, and having the spiritual outlet is a great relief. And again, if you're there with your family, you want to have the church available to you because of the shortage of priests. If you were to do a study, and they have done a study, the actual need for all six services requires almost 800 Catholic priests to be in an ideal situation to serve all the men and women currently serving and their families. We currently have about 184 military chaplains, so we are way, way down on the number of priests who are available. You know, the good news is there's a lot of seminarians in the pipeline, not as many as we'd like, but there's a lot. But the other side of that You have to go through the seminary, get ordained, then you have to serve in your diocese or your religious order for 3 to 5 years. So it's a long lead time to graduate and get on active duty or with the Guard and Reserve, a military chaplain. And a lot of our chaplains are also exiting on the other end, either retiring or going back to their home diocese. So we do what we can, and it's really, so what does a chaplain do? So a chaplain is not there just to minister to Catholics. A military chaplain has a responsibility. I mean, I was a battalion commander in the Army. I went to Iraq, Desert Storm. I had a chaplain for my battalion, a field artillery battalion, about 850 soldiers. And we had attachments. So we were over 1,000 soldiers in the unit that I was responsible for. My chaplain was of a Protestant denomination. However, he talked to soldiers of every religious faith, and then he would coordinate to get the rabbi to come by and talk about rarities. So if you think a Catholic priest is not very available, the Jewish rabbi is really not found that often on military. But we had in the Army division that I was in, we had a Catholic chaplain. He'd get him to come by. It's really important to be able to have access to that. But so they minister to all kinds of people. They provide a great insight because many soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, whatever, sometimes use the chaplain as an ombudsman, for example, on, you know, talking about what are issues and so on. It is a great relief for me to talk to my chaplain and identify issues that we may have, how we can make things better, and so on.
You know what, Steve? Thank you for that. That is a terrific witness to the power of our chaplains and what they do for the men, and the needs that we have to support this very important ministry. Can you talk a little bit about the efforts that you're leading in Indiana to support our chaplains?
Yeah, so, you know, the nice thing about the position that I'm in, I feel, is the biggest challenge is to communicate and educate. I think there's so much strong support within the Knights of Columbus. First of all, our fourth core principle is actually patriotism. That doesn't mean, you know, just support the military. I understand that part, but we are a very patriotic order. So by educate, I know I personally, and I have a group of Knights with whom I work, we go to actual councils and to assemblies and to parishes. I'm on a parish council. I talk to my parish council about some of this. And if we can educate, then we can get people to donate. And that has really worked out really well. We also actually do some fundraiser. We're working on a big fundraiser right now to help raise some money for a new initiative that we're doing, which would be a military chaplain sponsorship program. So we have Indiana priests serving as military chaplains in Japan, as I already mentioned, Georgia, Kansas, Colorado, and other locations, as well as our Guard and Reserve. They need items. For example, one of the things we want to provide to each of our Catholic military chaplains is a traveling field mass kit, kind of like a little suitcase that would have a chalice and oils and items they need for any field type situation. And I know, for example, we have our state convention coming up in May. We will have a breakout session, we call it, where we have the floor of the convention for an hour. We'll talk about military chaplains historically, currently, who our Indiana chaplains are, how we can help them. And each one has unique and different needs. I'm in touch with the first two already to find out. And our core thing that we'll provide is we're going to pray for them. I mean, every priest I know tells me, pray for me. So we're going to get our Knights to pray for our chaplains. We're going to get them mass kits. We're going to give them money for uniforms. We're going to give them money for activities so they can sponsor items. So I would say that anybody can go to our state website, indianakfc.org, and research and find out how what programs are available and how you can help donate. And I would just tell you, if you email veterans affairs@indianakfc.org, I'm just sitting around every day bored to death waiting to hear from people. I'd be glad to give you all the information you ever wanted, because I believe so passionately in this whole position that I'm holding, and the group of people with whom I work all feel the same way.
I can second that, because I tell you what, that's been one of the single most impressive things as a member of the state family, getting to watch you and getting to help support you, because you're not shy about asking for help, but you're also not shy about digging in. And that's something that I very much appreciate. So, Steve, I want to thank you for your time. And again, if you feel called to help out with the mission and ministry of the Veterans Affairs, please get in touch with Steve. You can find his email on the website. If you want to make a donation, you can do that through our charitable arm, and let him know that it is for veterans. So, Steve, God bless you, and thank you for spending your time with us tonight.
It's been my pleasure. Viva Jesus.
Viva Jesus.
This is Carl Kaiser with Night Vision. We want to talk to you a little bit today about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. It's a very important prayer to me personally, because it was the prayer that brought me back to the church. The message of the Divine Mercy Chaplet is nothing new. We have all been taught all our lives that God is merciful, which means, at least in my life, where he could have judged me and found me wanting, he has stayed his hand and found me worthy of redemption and giving another chance. The big calling point is to call folks to a deeper understanding that God's love is unlimited and available to all. There's a passage in the diary of St. Faustina, the saint that brought us the message of divine mercy. She said that the greater the sinner, the greater his right to my mercy, if he but only ask for it. The chaplet is very simple. Begins with the Our Father, and then Hail Mary, and then the Apostles' Creed. And then on a standard rosary, you would say this on the traditional Our Father beads. You would say, Eternal Father, I offer you the body and blood, soul and divinity of your dearly beloved Son, our Lord Jesus Christ, in atonement for our sins and those of the whole world. And then on each of the Hail Mary beads, you would say, for the sake of his sorrowful passion, have mercy on us and on the whole world. You would do 5 decades of those. And then on the clasp where the Blessed Mother's image usually is, you would hang on to that and you would say, Holy God, Holy Mighty One, Holy Immortal One, have mercy on us and on the whole world. You would say that 3 times. That is the basic form of the Chaplet of the Divine Mercy. You can write to the Marians of the Immaculate Conception out of Stockbridge, Massachusetts. They have been the guardians and the promoters of the Chaplet of the Divine Mercy since it was brought over from Poland shortly after the end of the Second World War. Our late Holy Father, Pope St. John Paul II, had such a tremendous devotion to it that it was he who canonized St. Faustina. It was he that actually shepherded the cause of St. Faustina through all of the processes and was instrumental in having the Divine Mercy Chaplet promulgated and advanced throughout the church. So it's traditionally the Sunday after Easter is Divine Mercy Sunday. So this Divine Mercy Sunday, let's get together, if not in our churches, at least in our own homes, at around 3 o'clock in the evening, and recite the Chaplet of the Divine Mercy. Again, this is Carl Kaiser with Night Vision. Back to you in the studio.
Thanks, Carl. Once again, here's Walt.
This is Walt Peha, and as a member of the State Council, I do a lot of work with outreach to the community programs. One of those is the Way of the Cross. It's an important way we can live our spiritual lives more fully, And I'm going to start with a bit of history, and then I'll have an invitation to you. Now, the Way of the Cross is also known as the Stations of the Cross. It's a traditional devotion that commemorates the final journey of Christ on his day of crucifixion. It's a series of 14 events or stations that depict the various stages of Jesus' passion and death, from his condemnation to his burial. The origin of the Way of the Cross can be traced back to the early Christian pilgrimages to Jerusalem. In the 4th century, when Constantine legalized Christianity and built churches on holy sites in the Holy Land, the practice of retracing the steps of Jesus along the Via Dolorosa, or the Way of Sorrows, became popular among the pilgrims. The first recorded Way of the Cross was established in the 12th century by the Crusaders, who marked the route with stone markers, or stations, that represented the various events of Jesus' journey. Over time, the devotion spread throughout Europe and became a popular means of expressing devotion to the suffering Jesus. The number of stations has varied from region to region and from church to church. It wasn't until the 18th century that the number was standardized to the current 14 stations. In 1731, Pope Clement XII officially approved the 14 stations and granted indulgences to those who devoutly followed the Way of the Cross. Today's Way of the Cross remains an important devotional practice for Catholics and many other Christians around the world. It's often celebrated during Lent, especially on Good Friday, and provides a powerful meditation on the sufferings of Jesus and the meaning of his sacrifice. The 85th annual Knights of Columbus Way of the Cross, with Archbishop Thompson presiding, will be held at the American Legion Mall on Friday, the April 7th, or Good Friday, at noon. I've never done one Way of the Cross until the 80th, which was about 5 years ago. I never felt called to the devotion, but I was called to serve my brother knights, and I followed that call, just like the pilgrims that came before me. I didn't realize it at the time, though. Now, as we proceeded from station to station, I felt the other knights and faithful walking with me, as they have done for the last 85 years. The interesting thing was, it wasn't just the people who were physically present with me, but it was the people who had been there spiritually that were also walking with me. And that turned it into a very powerful and moving experience that really keeps me coming back. So if you quiet your soul enough to hear this, I invite you to share in Christ's passion with us on noon, April 7th, or Good Friday, at the American Legion Mall in Indianapolis. God bless you, and may you find comfort in his sacrifice for us.
Night Vision is a presentation of the Indiana State Council of the Knights of Columbus and Catholic Radio Indy. Contributors for this episode include Scott Schutte, Walt Pahan, and Bob Zielinski. Night Vision is produced by Z Media Studios in South Bend, Indiana.